Investors are cashing out of nearly every possible asset. We'll explain why.
We're seeing sort of widespread liquidation, the types of which we haven't really seen since the financial crisis.
Plus, the U.S. is working to ramp up its testing for coronavirus. Why that didn't happen sooner.
Part of the failure involves not just planning and kind of technical glitches, but as we reported, there seemed to be a big failure of imagination on the part of the federal government.
It's Wednesday, March 18th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. The number of coronavirus infections worldwide has topped 200,000, and the U.S. and Europe are taking new steps to slow the spread of the virus. The U.K. will shut down all schools starting Friday. President Trump says the White House will invoke the Defense Production Act to increase medical supplies. That's a Korean War-era law that gives the president the power to encourage or require businesses to produce goods tied to national defense. President Trump announced the plan this afternoon.
I view it as a wartime president. I mean, that's what we're fighting. I mean, it's a very tough situation.
Trump also announced plans to close the border with Canada to non-essential traffic. He said both countries agreed to the ban. The U.S. Senate has voted 90-8 to pass a relief bill to fight the coronavirus pandemic. The bill will provide free testing for the COVID-19 disease caused by the virus and require smaller employers to offer at least 2 weeks of paid sick leave to many of the people affected. It'll also increase Medicaid funding, expand unemployment insurance, and provide more money for food stamps. President Trump is expected to sign it into law. Employers across the country are cutting shifts, suspending work, or laying off employees as the impact of the coronavirus ripples through the economy. More than 3,600 people, mostly from the entertainment and leisure industries, have been laid off, according to data from the outplacement firm Challenger, Gray, and Christmas. Globally, the number of job losses from the pandemic could reach 25 million in a worst-case scenario, according to the International Labor Organization. In New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo has ordered businesses to keep half of their workforce at home in order to slow the spread of the virus. Grocery stores, pharmacies, shipping companies, and other essential services will be exempt from the rule. The number of confirmed cases of the virus in New York has now exceeded 2,300. Wednesday was a bad day for U.S. stocks and for debt markets and commodities. In fact, you'd have a hard time finding any asset that wasn't part of today's broad sell-off. The Dow fell about 6% to close below 20,000 for the first time in 3 years. Oil prices dropped 24% to hit an 18-year low, and yields on one-month Treasury bills hit their lowest level in several years. Investors are selling nearly everything they can, even safety assets. Joining me now to discuss just what's going on is Wall Street Journal markets reporter Akani Otani. Akani, another devastating day for Wall Street. Tell us what happened.
We saw very quickly another round of very rowdy trading, especially overnight, where futures once again hit their limit down, meaning they couldn't possibly trade lower due to rules that exchanges have been put in place. And then another trading halt during the actual trading session where the whole stock market was paused for 15 minutes. And those circuit breakers essentially kick in with the intent of giving some traders some time to pause and think and hopefully restore some calm to the markets. But that didn't really end up working. Stocks actually ended the day sharply lower, with the Dow falling below 20,000 for the first time since 2017.
We're also seeing what's considered now a dangerous phase for markets as investors are liquidating and moving away from what are traditionally considered safe assets. What's happening there?
Well, we typically see market sell-offs happen in the following way. Usually you see riskier assets like stocks and oil falling, and then the prices of so-called haven assets. So things like highly rated investment grade bonds and also treasuries. Usually the prices of those things rise during sell-offs. But in the last couple of days, we've actually seen a widespread sell-off that has taken the prices of all of these things lower at once. And that is troubling because it suggests to a lot of folks that we're seeing this sort of widespread liquidation, the types of which we haven't really seen since the financial crisis.
As much as we can predict, what should investors brace for over the next couple of days and weeks?
I think a lot of investors are very focused right now on the number of cases that we're going to be seeing in the U.S. And, you know, even in New York State, we've heard that we're expected to see thousands more cases in the coming weeks. So it'll be really key for investors to see if the recent restrictions put in place on businesses and consumer activity do help sort of stem the rise of cases. And also if we're seeing progress on things like fiscal stimulus, aid for troubled companies like airlines, and of course, aid for consumers, many of which have been put out of jobs due to the pandemic, if those things start kicking in, because everyone expects there's going to be a short-term economic impact due to the pandemic. But what they're hoping for is that we do see a rebound in the second half of the year. So the things that we'll be seeing in the next couple of weeks will hopefully help us inform a little bit more where we stand on that.
Okay, Wall Street Journal markets reporter Akani Otani, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Today, the Trump administration told Americans that the nation is ramping up its ability to test for the new coronavirus. But as of this morning, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said only about 32,000 tests had been conducted. That's far below the capacity of some other countries. Our team took a look at some of the early missteps and miscalculations that limited testing for the virus and is now making it harder for the nation to fight it. Joining me now is Wall Street Journal reporter Chris Weaver. Chris, why wasn't the U.S. better prepared?
Yeah, so initially, what we've found is that the CDC and the state public health departments basically told private labs that, looked at getting into coronavirus testing in early February that they had it under control. And the CDC initially developed a test that turned out not to work when they began distributing it around the country. So there was a technical glitch that led to a setback there. It took them a couple of weeks to take another shot at developing the test. And by the time they had, cases had begun to pop up around the country. Kind of layered on top of that, the Food and Drug Administration, which has a special power to regulate testing during emergencies, stepped in and said that for any lab that wanted to do tests for coronavirus, they had to submit a special application that would allow them to do it. Under normal circumstances, many of these labs don't have to do anything. It's not like marketing a drug, right, where you've got to go through a lengthy approval process. You just have to develop and validate the test that you're doing just at your own lab, using the basic science that guides all laboratory operations, and you can start doing it without the FDA weighing in at all. So places took this as like a kind of a signal not to begin efforts to ramp up testing at the like commercial and hospital clinical laboratories around the country that would do your ordinary, your typical blood tests, cholesterol tests or whatever. So that decision at the FDA sort of limited the development of capacity in that part of the lab continuum here. In addition to that, the overall engagement with the private sector by the government, and I think that includes both, dealing with encouraging labs to ramp up sooner and also making sure that the supply chains that would be needed to facilitate wide-scale testing just never happened. And when more labs in these last 2 weeks finally did begin to come to the market, there have been giant supply shortages that have made it really difficult for them to get off the ground.
And this also influenced when and how the public learned about these setbacks and at times contradicted what we were hearing from administration officials.
Yeah, I mean, part of the failure involves not just planning and kind of technical glitches. But, as we reported, there seemed to be a big failure of imagination on the part of the federal government where people you know, both in the White House and the Health and Human Services Department, as well as, you know, more sort of technocrats in the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, failed to kind of envision the potential for this outbreak getting out of control. You know, they seemed to think that they were going to succeed at containing it until it was quite a bit too late. And this is all against the backdrop of administration officials at the highest levels, like the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Alex Azar, and President Donald Trump, sending the message that, you know, the testing program was going great. And, you know, for instance, President Trump noted that, you know, it could be that the whole thing was gone in a day as a result of a miracle at one point while this was going on. And, you know, our sources are saying that only in the first week of March did they begin to kind of recognize the urgency of the situation and start calling for more testing. And those calls have kind of led to the ramp up that we're now seeing. The concern in the public health world is that it might be too little too late as the virus spread kind of below the radar for weeks.
Right. And to that point, how does U.S. testing capacity right now compare to other nations impacted by the coronavirus? Do we even know the full scope of what we're dealing with?
Yeah, we don't. I mean, probably no nation does. But I think, you know, South Korea is the example that's been held out most often. That it truly is possible to know an awful lot more than we do. And the comparison as of, you know, now is that South Korea is able to test around 20,000 people a day and has been testing between 10 and 20,000. You know, by comparison, the CDC's most recent reporting as of this morning was that 32,000 U.S. citizens have been tested so far. And, you know, one of the things that we learned in the course of our reporting is just because, you know, test kits are available doesn't mean that, you know, the actual capacity is there. If, you know, ancillary elements like the swabs or some of the other off-the-shelf chemicals you need to complete the test are not available. So we'll be following those shortages, too.
Wall Street Journal reporter Christopher Weaver, thank you so much for joining me.
Sure, thanks.
And finally, across the country, people are getting used to working from home full time. This week, we've been asking you to call in and tell us how you're managing the shift. David from Columbia, Maryland, has this tip.
The biggest time saver I have for working at home is focusing all of my attention on one device. Don't multitask between phone, tablet, and computer. Pick one device that you're going to work on and focus all your attention on that.
Do you have a tip for working from home? Or maybe a work from home challenge you could use some help with? Give us a call at 314-635-0388 and leave us a voice message. Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, will be sharing suggestions and answering your questions on our Tech News Briefing podcast. You can also email her at joanna.stern@wsj.com. We'll put that number and email address in the podcast description. And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.